From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's another edition of the show that puts the fun in Alien Frontiers, the bored in Lord of the Rings, the terror in Terra Mystica, the ace in Race for the Galaxy, the roids in Android Netrunner, the duh in Seven Wonders, and the ass in Brass. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark in the house. Mark, you're having the best day of your life, you said.
Rocking in the free world. I am having the best day ever, and it's just got better because I'm here in the studio with you for another action-packed episode of Champagne Radio with the Dice Men Cometh. We are going to talk about Vlada Vartel, that famous Czech designer with so many great games.
It's a real person called that.
Yeah, Vlada Vartel. And he's designed so many great games. We are finally, listener, going to talk about Game of Thrones games. You asked for it. You wanted it. We are going to give it to you. We're going to hear about D&D Next, the new Next Edition. Mm. And we're going to find out all about my character in the Star Wars role-playing game. I can't wait. I'm on the edge of my seat. And if we get time, we're talking about Kickstarter, but now here comes some heavy metal shit.
You know, when I first got into role-playing games, my mum was really worried. She said, you know, doesn't that all lead to devil worship and evil? And aren't you concerned about the evil that men do? Because it lives on and on. And that's what Iron Maiden are here to tell us about, boys and girls. The evil that men do. From 1980, Tickety 2. Here it is. Those evil dice men cometh. I'm going to stop that line of what I was saying, and because that was only going to end in tears. Iron Maiden on 99.3 FM Edge Radio. Trent and Mark here, the Dice Man Cometh. How you going?
I am great. I've had a great day, and as I said, it just keeps getting better. Here talking about games.
Well, normally we have a little game night at my joint after we do the show, but you're not coming along tonight. You got like better things to do, apparently. Have you been playing anything lately?
Well, as a matter of fact...
Oh, hang on. I saw this on Facebook.
Yes, I went out for a drink on Monday night and went to a local establishment. I'd like to give a shout-out to it. The Dickens Cider Bar.
The what?
The Dickens Cider Bar.
The what?
Yeah, well, all the ladies, they all love a Dickens Cider.
It's a local drop that's made in Tasmania. Yeah. For any of our interstate or international listeners who download the podcast, Dickens. Mr. Dickens.
Comes from Launceston.
Yeah.
Opened a cider bar in Launceston, now has extended itself to the grand capital of our great state here.
And they allow board games in this establishment?
Well, they have a very small assortment of board games. The usual pub variety. So Sequence, which is a card game. Mm. Connect Four.
Of course.
You know.
I'm not inspired.
And Jenga. And of course, someone suggested, oh, let's have a game of Jenga, yay! And I was like... Yeah, he wake me up when it's finished. And then the barman, whose name escapes me, a young Canadian chap, said, oh, let's play Cider Jenga. Well, except that's not a Canadian accent. And we were like, Cider Jenga? What's that?
Right.
And he said, well, let me show you. And he built this contraption. And I've actually posted photos on the Facebook page of the starting portion of the Cider Jenga.
And this looks like you're building some kind of weird Malaysian tower,
yeah,
skyscraper
thing. Yeah,
well,
it's thing, funny, or... because the other name for it is Thai Jenga.
Oh.
And apparently it comes from the fact that in Thailand, in every single bar where Westerners go, there's a game of Jenga.
Yeah.
I like the name Cider Jenga myself, because it does go a bit crazy, which is what cider makes you do. The thing was, it gets really tall, really fast.
So hang on, you're actually where are you taking? Are you taking the pieces from the bottom?
Yeah,
them on
so
top?
Well, so you've basically got four legs of the tower, and if you play your cards right, you actually end up taking
there
out.
Are cards as well. What? Now you're really confused us.
If you do the sums right, you can actually end up removing one, if not two, of the legs. And because you're not putting these bits of wood flat on top of each other, you're standing them up tall. This thing goes up and up and up and up and up. And if you check out the photos, you will see what I mean. The bartender was almost not tall enough to place these pieces.
And how does this combine with cider? Well, I'm imagining.
Very well,
and
in
I'm
fact.
Imagining in a pack bar, there's a lot of... Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. It was atmosphere galore. I would highly recommend Cider Jenga as a great bar game. And I think, as a slight segue, we need to have a segment on games to play in a pub.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's. I'll table that for later.
Thank you.
Pub games. I've made a note. What have you been playing?
That you're not going to be embarrassed to play in public.
Well, yeah, look, I think we have already talked about, you know, what of these games that we play, can we play in a bar? Mm. Where firstly, you've got the table space, so you don't have little cubes or little plastic miniatures or whatever running under the table and getting squashed. But secondly, you're absolutely right. The people don't walk up and go, nads. And they actually go, wow, what's that?
Yeah, what the hell's going on?
You know, classic one that comes to mind is the Skull and Roses that, playing with literally just
with
coasters.
Your coasters, right. Okay, so that's Jenga. Now, on the other end of the spectrum...
Cider Jenga,
right. So that's Cider Jenga all the way down there in the distance from where I'm standing right now, because I have finally got my hands on a copy of one of the most highly rated board games of the past couple of years, rated number 13 out of the top 100 on Board Game Geek at the moment, I believe. Robinson Crusoe Adventures on the Cursed Island by Ignace Trevicek. Trzewiczek, Polish surname. I'm sure I'm mangling the pronunciation. This is incredible.
Yeah.
It's a co-op game,
four-player
maximum. You get washed up on a single hex of an unexplored island. Mm-hmm. You've got to gather your food. You've got to build your shelter, work together to do all that. You can go hunting wild animals, and you can build items that are supposed to be helping you to do all of this, but somehow they seem to be distracting you and diverting resources from the shelter that you're supposed to be building. And you've got to get the shelter built because the weather is going to come in. And oh my God, this is the cruelest game.
Yeah.
This is absolutely brutal. So
this sounds like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the game.
Look, you know what? Pretty much. Yeah. You know, writ large. So everyone's working together to try and tick off all these basic items, but there are actually scenarios that you're trying to achieve. Six of them that come with the base game. Each one's totally different. We've only played the introductory one and failed dismally at it twice.
Yeah.
We cannot even begin to see how it is that it's actually possible to win from this lowly point that we're at. It's a little bit of a complex game, and I must say the rule book, again, a very, very ongoing theme in games that we discuss. This rule book's really bad, and I'm sorry, Ignace, if you're listening. Because obviously it's been translated from the Polish, maybe, and there's a couple of typos in it. So, and it's just these big blocks of text. It doesn't have to be like that, you know. And really the only solution was for me to sit down on my own for about 2 or 3 hours one night, bust it all out.
And I've
now got the game in my head where I can explain it in almost 15 minutes, you know. So that tells me that it's possible to explain it easier. So look, very quickly, there's an event deck which gives you, an event, oddly enough, every turn, a challenge that you all have to deal with.
Mm.
That's in addition to getting food,
Yes.
When you're gathering food and exploring and stuff, it might trigger an adventure, which will have an immediate effect, but a secondary effect as well. It goes into that event deck that I mentioned, okay? So
shit's going to come down. Stuff's going to happen later on.
It might be a dog that wanders into the camp and has to sniff around, but then the dog's going to come back and bite you.
Literally.
And so it gets shuffled in. You don't know where it's going to come out. And like I said, in the meantime, you're trying to achieve all these goals. In the introductory scenario, you're just trying to build a bonfire so you can get noticed by any passing ships. It's essentially work or placement. There's one or two actions each. There's dice to roll. There's fantastic card play, heaps of cards, first class production, lots of replayability, and an expansion coming out for it already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the Voyage of the Beagle expansion. I know.
Charles Darwin washes up to Robinson Crusoe.
So it's extra components and scenarios based on the voyages of Charles Darwin, which just blows my mind.
So it sounds like it's got a truck ton of replayability already.
Yeah. Look, we're really excited about it. The only downside is that it is only four players, and so you can't share it with more people. But it's quite a long one. It's certainly on the complex side. I just hope, you know, because it is so tough, I just hope it's not so tough because it's actually broken.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the math.
Broken on the side of the game.
That's right, where it really will just come down to having one or two cards or tiles that you absolutely must have in each scenario, and if chance takes that away from you, you can't possibly beat. I'm hoping that's not the case.
It sounds really interesting, though. I'm keen to try it.
Yeah, Robinson Crusoe, it is not cheap. $125 I paid for this.
But it's a mega Euro with lots of wooden pieces and, as you said, production values out the wazoo.
And as we've always said, you've got to be prepared to pay a little more sometimes when you want to support your friendly local game store if you want people to stock this thing in your hometown.
So you did support your friendly local game store in this instance? Fantastic.
That's Robinson Crusoe Adventures on the Cursed Isle by Ignace Trevicek. And speaking of designers with unpronounceable names,
Vlachatl.
Are we going to be talking about that?
No. We're going to come back.
That's later.
We're
going to
talk about role-playing games. We're going to talk about D&D next.
Oh, yes.
And my character. I can't wait to find out who he is.
You're in for a surprise. It's coming up on The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was Saya with I Kill the Day. I didn't kill the day today, but I just kicked it for a goal. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh.
Your tail's certainly up tonight.
It is, absolutely. Nothing beats having a beer before a radio show, that's for sure. So look, long-time fans, if there are such a thing, long-time fans of the Dice Men Cometh will remember that we were special guests on another podcast, Nerdzilla on ABC Radio.
Yeah, not just any podcast, Nerdzilla, thank you very much.
It was nominated for an international award. I think it was in the final handful of podcasts for an international award around technology or popular culture.
I don't know if that was the episode we were on.
No, probably not.
I'd like to think so, though.
Yeah. Anyway, we were special guests on the Nerdzilla podcast talking about role-playing games, and in particular, D&D Next, or what has become D&D 5th Edition. And we played a sort of, I don't even think it was a beta version, an alpha version of this. We played a scenario, we filmed some of it, we were on their podcast and a video cast. And look, at the time, I was sort of a bit, I could take it or leave it.
There wasn't much to it at that time.
And I think, Trent, you maybe had a stronger reaction than I did.
Well, again, it just seemed very, very simple and basic at the time. But it really was like, okay, here's the first little bit of playtesting that we're gonna do for you, from Wizards of the Coast. And there wasn't that much to it, so I was just like, it's okay.
Yeah, not much meat on the bones. It was sort of that skeletal, shambling person. Yeah. Not doing much at all, really.
Well, the meat is definitely on the bones now because 5th edition is essentially... Well, look, the official release date is actually the 15th of July for the starter set, all right? But it's basically out now because the first... A 100-page PDF is available for download for free.
Oh, hang on.
Yeah.
For free?
For free.
Okay. Wizards of the Coast,
I know. Hasbro giving away D&D content for free.
Okay, so there's something new.
On www.wizards.com/DND, the letters DND. And predictably, mixed reviews on the internet.
Yes.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought that there would be divisive opinion? The starter set itself is apparently a little bit flimsy in its production, but hey, if you want to keep costs down, that's one of the first things you can do and not, bind the whole thing as a hardback.
Well, that's right. To go out and, usually get the hardbacks where you need the GM or DM's guide, the monster manual, the player guide, usually you're looking at 50, 60, 80 bucks a pop for those hardback books anyway.
Yeah, Monster Manual's not coming out just yet. That's later in the year. Look, I'm not going to go into the whole internet furor about it, but suffice to say that I think people are saying it's a good introduction, but it's not comprehensive. Yeah. And that seems to me to be entirely the problem, because those two statements right there are mutually exclusive. You can't have a comprehensive introduction.
That's right. You can't have a starter set which gives you every single thing you need to know, because by definition, a starter set just gives you a taster.
And who's the target audience for this?
Yeah.
You know, is it us, the 40-something over-the-hill gamers who have no time to
learn a whole new system.
Yeah, or is it, you know, some kid who's 12 and who's heard about this Dungeons & Dragons thing and wants to try something new, you know? I just don't think that Wizards of the Coast can really do anything right, no matter what they do.
Oh, no, they were going to cop it either way, weren't they?
Yeah, because haters gotta hate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, there's even people actually analysing the math.
Yeah?
Because I guess that's my personal criticism about D&D, because it is a very simple role-playing game, and if you boil it right down, you can math the whole thing out, and I suppose that's how some people like to play.
Well, you always did have that issue of the, if I use the term correctly, the min-maxes.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
The... where the term came from, the Munchkins.
Right, and if you want to play that way, you can. Yeah. I've personally been always a bit more interested in the story. I did flip through the PDF and looked at the character creation process. All the ingredients that we remember from D&D early on are all still there. The races, the classes, the alignments. There's a new openness about gender identification and sexual orientation as well, which is interesting. Just a couple of paragraphs on it, no biggie there.
Yeah.
And there's a new thing in there, a slightly new sort of background mechanic that provides some charts for events in your past and ideals to strive for and some character flaws and things like that. Nothing that really gives you any math to play with, but it does help you flesh your character out a little bit, which is interesting. But like I'm saying, you can play that mathy way, or you can play a game like Call of Cthulhu, which is the role-playing game that I've sunk all my spare time into over the past couple of years, which is almost completely story-based.
Yes.
You know, there's not really that much of a system to it. And, hey, I ran a game of Call of Cthulhu with you.
You did, and it was a great story, and, you know, like, I didn't have a clue what was happening from the minute to the next.
Were you the character
that survived?
Oh, you survived.
I was the one survivor.
Was that you that stuck your head up into the trapdoor in the ceiling?
Yes. I know,
and
I didn't expect to survive. I did. It's funny, though, you should say, Trent, because talking about 40-something men who have no time to sink into a brand new, totally new and incredibly complicated, from what I can see, system, isn't that exactly what you've been doing?
Star Wars Edge of the Empire. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I have on and off over the past few weeks been reading up on the rule books, and I'm almost ready. I'm almost ready. We've got our characters created. We've got our party together. It's not that complicated a system. The reason I like it, this is the point that I wanted to get to, is because I find that Edge of the... And I haven't played it yet, so I don't know, but I find that Edge of the Empire sits somewhere in between the math of a D&D and the pure storytelling mechanisms of a Call of Cthulhu.
Maybe a fiasco.
But you've actually got... There's a mechanic called obligation in Edge of the Empire, which is part of your character's background, and it's actually a quantifiable amount. It turns into a percentile dice roll. So let's say everybody has 10 points of obligation in the team. It's a team of 5, so there's a 50% chance that obligation is going to be triggered when you roll a percentile dice, and a single player's obligation might be triggered, and that introduces a story element to it. I think that's a fantastic idea, not something I'd seen a lot of in other systems.
So, and it's not so much about the math then, it's about the opportunity to introduce new story hooks as opposed to having to cook up some, look, by the way, you happen to be wandering down the hallway and Joe Blow stumbles out from a bar and you knew him from 10 years ago and blah, blah, blah. Like, you're sort of having to weave it in that way.
What I've been spending all my time doing is actually weaving it in a way that makes it... Because you know me with story,
you are the storyteller.
I'm anal about this stuff. So, look, what I've got is a group of 5 Star Wars characters. Mm-hmm. Mark's one of them. I've provided background to 4 of the 5 so far. Mm-hmm. We've got a Twi'lek big game hunter. We've got a Chiss assassin. She's going to be very interesting and deadly. We've got a
Trandoshan
doctor.
which is going to be hilarious because the Trandoshans are, you know, the lizard
big
guys.
Big lizard guys with big pointy fingers.
And we've got, you know, a guy with like, you know, he hasn't got any proper hands, just three claws, and you're a doctor.
I can't wait to get an appendectomy from him.
Making a rod for your own back. We've got an astromech droid who's a slicer, and we've got...
Bop-bop-bom.
Mark Rickards, do you want to know what your name...
Tell me.
Because you wanted to call yourself the Corellian. And your whole idea was, I'm a Corellian, and I know I'll have a hot ship and a debt to some kind of crime lord. What a fantastically original idea that was, right, mate.
I was running hot that day, wasn't I?
So
I threw it out there to the GM and said, you come up with a better name than I can.
Well, a good Corellian name. Kyle Rogan.
Oh.
Hey?
That Seth's brother-in-law. Exactly.
You know, equal parts Kyle, what's his name?
Cockatan.
Well, I was thinking from the guy from Terminator. And, yeah, that fat stone guy, Seth Rogen from... So here's my description of... Well, being a typical, you know, Corellian, the type of guy who would call himself the Corellian.
Yeah, yeah. So for the listeners... Han Solo is a Corellian, in case you didn't know.
Impulsive, rebellious, confident, blustery, hot-headed, blowhard.
Not me.
A pilot with a price on his head. Wowza, wowza. But but deeper than that, you are, Mark, you're a middle-class spoilt brat from Corellia who had dreams of adventure, and you've travelled to the bum end of the Star Wars galaxy to a tiny little dust mote called Formos, which is notable only for one single fact, and that is that it's at the end of the Kessel Run. Okay,
so I did the Kessel Run.
No, you haven't done the Kessel Run. You're nowhere near good enough to do the Kessel Run. You are hanging around in the bars where the good pilots are, hoping that a little bit of the Kessel Run glory is going to rub off on you. You've had no work. You can't get any jobs because no one wants to hire a young guy with no experience who calls himself the Corellian. But you have managed to team up with an astromech droid, and more details about that coming up. And I mean, maybe once we get the first game session down, we can do a recap or something like that.
Maybe even if there was enough interest, we could record a session and have it as an extra.
Well, we don't want to be accused of ripping off Shut Up and Sit Down in that podcast any more than we already are, do we? All right, so that's Star Wars Edge of the Empire. Mark, I promise you we actually are going to play soon.
Kyle Rogan.
Nicky Rini. All right, we're talking Vlada Hvatl next on The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. A little Fire and Gold from Neighbourhood Youth and Tithe with Careless Woman, and it brings us to this point on The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 with Trent and Mark and our mate Vlada.
Vlada Hvatl.
Or Vladimir, actually, is his full proper name.
Ah.
The Czech game designer who we are a huge fan of and talk about quite a bit on this show, and with damn good reason. So he's a former video game designer, Vladimir is, turned into a board game designer. Actually, he always was a board game designer all along, kind of took a diversion into video games in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
How would you sort of sum up the games that he makes, mate? He's a European designer, but he's certainly got American sensibilities.
I would say that the one thing about Vlada is that he does sort of combine the two genres, really, because he has the very European rules, mechanisms, lots of cubes and all that sort of stuff. But the theme, his games are dripping with theme.
Absolutely.
Whether it's, you know, in the dungeon, whether it's in space, his games are dripping with theme for the most part.
And they're also really complicated, generally. There's often a lot of humour in them. In fact, some of them, frankly, are actually really, really hilarious. And they're tough as well. I think, unashamedly, games for geeks. These are not for casual gamers. Yeah. Now, the first one that really made people pay attention, and it's still a favourite of lots of people, is Through the Ages.
Yes.
That was his first big hit.
Yes.
I've not played this, Mark, so
tell
me
about
it.
I have played it, and it is one of those... Like, it's a very Euro civilization game.
Okay.
No board to speak of. No figures, no maps. It's all in cards, little wooden bits. But it does capture that feel of starting off in, you know, in ancient Samaria or in ancient Israel or in ancient Rome, building up this civilization, and he's starting off with very simple armies, very simple structures, simple farms, simple mines, that sort of thing.
The birth of agriculture.
Yeah, and building them up to the modern day. And it is, it's complicated. And like many, like many Vlada games, you know, it actually has the training game.
Right.
And then
right.
the advanced game. And then the full game.
Wow.
So, you know, you basically need to play two different practice games before you get to the full game. And the thing is, you really actually do need to do that because of the level of complexity. You might be able to get away with two, but when you get to the full game, it's just got such nuance. There's so many sort of combos you
can
do. Can
you tell us something about the mechanics?
So it's very much what you have is you have these cards that sort of move along each turn, and you have cards that you can... It's sort of like, I guess you'd call it an action point game, where you have a certain number of action points that you can spend. So you'll have some cards that cost one action point, some that cost two, some that cost three, and they move down this sort of like conveyor belt, where the ones that cost one at the end of the turn, they disappear, and the ones that cost two move down. So you only sort of get... one shot to get these things at cheap. And if you see this really fantastic ability come, like a super ability to make your agriculture, for example, much more productive, you will grab that when it costs three action points because you don't want to let your opponent get that. And then mixed in with the sort of the buildings and the production capacities, you've got wonders, you've got military units, you've got science, you've got religion, and all these things you can build. So you can have a society that's very much focused on religion. You can have a society that's focused on recreation. You know, you have gladiators, and you have arenas, and you have coliseums, and
but these build up to theaters. But not everybody has to go down the same.
Yeah, yeah, you have so many paths to victory.
Wow.
Okay. And it's a juggling of, in terms of the production, like if you produce too much stuff, you actually, your civilization gets bloated and you lose stuff at the end of the turn. If you have too many people out there producing stuff, then all of a sudden there's an oversupply in the labor market. There's no jobs for anyone, or there's no unemployed people to fill jobs that become up, and people get really unhappy. And then you need military to bring them back in line, and it's that balance between doing too well and not doing well enough. Some people go down the path of military, some people go economic. It's just got so many paths to victory. It's really interesting.
This sounds like I need a day to sit down and learn this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the training game will take you 2 hours. The advanced game probably take you another 2 hours. And then the full game is going to probably take you 3 hours. And you really want to bite it off in two or maybe three cherries.
You seem to say that it's worth it, though.
Oh, it is. Yeah, look, it's great. And look, I would compare it. Recently, I played Civilization, which is the board game version of the Sid Meier game. And while it looks beautiful, well, it's got these lovely map tiles and little plastic figures and everything like that, for me, it didn't have half the civilization building element of Through the Ages.
Which is very much still in print and remains very
popular. Well, in fact, because we're probably not going to get to my Kickstarter news at the moment... the third edition of Through the Ages is on Kickstarter. It is already 260% funded. It's got 12 days to go. And you pay $60 for the new edition.
Yeah.
$15 shipping to Australia, unfortunately.
$15 is actually not that
bad.
On the scale of Kickstarter.
It is quite a heavy game because there's lots of wood, lots of little chits, nice cards, nice boards. You know, it's got a lot of stuff. I reckon it's pretty good value for $75 from Kickstarter.
There you go. Through the Ages, the game that gives you lots of wood. You heard it from Mark. So, in terms of playing length, a much shorter Vlada game, Space Alert, and this is the one that I've got. This came out in 2009. It won a special critics award with the Spiel des Jahres. It's not an award they give out every year. It's a cooperative survival game set in a Douglas Adams style space station from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that is beset with malfunctions.
Enemy activity detected. Please begin first phase.
And that is a little clip from the soundtrack that you're hearing right there, because this game comes with a CD soundtrack. Let me explain. And look, I'll just say from the outset that the box for the Space Alert has got some of the naffest artwork that I've ever seen, and it is completely unrepresentative of what actually is inside the box, which is very challenging and a lot of fun.
Although you know that what he's doing is he's building on the theme that he created with the game that came out the year before, which was Galaxy Truckers, that I'm going to talk about in a minute.
All right, so with Space Alert, your space station's got six rooms, and each one of them's got tasks in it, like firing lasers and powering up the batteries that fly the lasers, and they need to be charged and loaded, and then you've got to move between the rooms, and only one person in the elevator at any one time, thank you very much, otherwise that shuts down. You've got to go into the room, do one action, or move each turn. There's one room which is purely there just to annoy you. You've got to go in there and wiggle the mouse,
yes, I know,
otherwise the computer shuts down. Everyone's got to work together to meet every single threat, because there's robots going on the rampage inside the space station, there's space boogers and asteroids coming at you from outside, so you've all got to coordinate your movements and your actions as efficiently as possible using a deck of cards which says, hey, I move left, I move right, or I do that action here and that action there. Now, here this all takes place over 12 turns, and it's just movement and action, but here's the twist. You play it in real time.
And so, it only takes, like, what, 10 minutes to run through that soundtrack?
A 10-minute CD soundtrack that's full of sound effects and triggers, alerts, internal and external threats, communication blackouts where you're not allowed to talk. You've got to flip over the cards when it tells you to do that. You complete the soundtrack after 10 minutes. There's more of it right there. And then you go into the resolution phase.
Time G plus one. Threat. Zone white.
So once your soundtrack's over, you've then got to move through the cards you played. Did I mention you're playing them all face down?
Yeah.
I didn't know. And you've got to flip them up and resolve them and see how well you've actually all worked together. And of course, you bugger it up every single time.
I know, it's the hilarious thing of, yay, we did it, okay,
let's
just replay that.
And see how badly we cocked it up, yeah, with hilarious results usually. And you find yourself stuck in the elevator. just going up and down.
Oh, no one forgot to wiggle them. No one remembered to wiggle a mouse.
The whole thing shut down. Space Alert.
Yeah.
And again, two rule books. One 8-page rule book and a 20-page rule book. Introductory scenarios. I debate whether or not it's really necessary in this case, but a great, great game.
Oh, it's so much fun. And, you know, the soundtrack. I mean, it's what the sort of Curse of the Temple is sort of based on, that whole real-time soundtrack.
Yeah, it's not just a soundtrack that provides ambience or anything.
It actually is the game.
It is the
and there
game,
are
yeah.
I think there are 10 different ones that
Something
come
like
through
that.
The come with the game.
Lots of variety.
Look, just quickly, and I mentioned it briefly, the art on Space Alert does come from the game he invented that came out the year before, called Galaxy Trucker, and we have talked about it on this show before, so I'm not going to go into it in detail, but it is that game in two parts, where number one is sort of like a Tetris thing, where you're basically inventing a spaceship out of spare pipes and bits and pieces, and you're creating it on your board, and then the second part is you then got to fly that spaceship around the galaxy in a race, trying to collect stuff, and the hilarity that ensues where you get hit by an asteroid, and because of you've carefully placed each part of the spaceship, one connector gets wiped out and half your ship falls off. And, you know, as I know I've mentioned before, but I vividly remember the game where our friend of the show, Nathan, ended up two men in a tin can floating back into the space station at the end of the round. It was literally all that was left. It is a hilarious game. There's so many expansions that we've talked about. They've come out with the anniversary edition which is very expensive. But it is a brilliant game. If you get a chance to try it, Galaxy Trucker, I'd highly recommend it.
And like we always say, the thing about his games is that they just turn all your expectations on their head. Look, another quick mention of one, Mage Knight, that I don't think either of us have played. But if you
ever... Oh, no, I have.
Oh, you have?
I have played Mage Knight.
Oh, my God.
Good friend of the show and long game explainer, John, owns Mage Knight.
Does he?
Shout out to John. And that's probably why not many more people have played Mage Knight.
Well, look, if you've
ever... Because it is one of those training game, 1.5 hour explanations.
But if you've ever played Talisman when you were a kid, or Runebound, or Hero Quest, or something like that, and you've thought, hey, I love this sword and sorcery theme, but I need more meat on the bones, this is the game.
Oh, yeah, Euro version. Look, yeah. All I can say is about Vlada is... He does do things harder, better, faster, longer.
That's a segue to a song, isn't it?
It is. Here we are, back from the Dice Men Cometh. That was Daft Punk with Stronger, Better, Faster, Louder, Thank You, Vlada. We've got a special guest in the studio. It's Alistair from Edge Radio, the programming manager.
Oh, sorry, I didn't really mean to wander in on your show.
Oh, my God, he's in here checking up on us.
We've got to do it right, okay?
Okay, Alistair.
Don't press the wrong button.
Alistair is one of the guys who runs the radio station here that's kind enough to allow us on here to prattle on. how are we doing, Alistair?
You're doing quite well,
Oh, thanks.
I want to come in with some sort of, generic criticism, too much laughter, too much fun going on. Stop it, stop, fun, no. But
Some management buzzwords for us.
Oh, look, vertical integration.
Yeah, contextualization.
Yeah, yeah. How are we going to, balance that with our current, time poor management skills?
Yes, that's us, because we've run out of time again.
Yeah, so look, I did want to give a couple of quick shout-outs just to Frank, a.k.a. Mr. Skeletor on Board Game Geek, and to Matt Urbauer. I think I'm pronouncing your name wrongly, Matt. What I love about this show is that it creates a debate about who the best singer in Anthrax was on the Board Game Geek website. I love that about what we do. That's fantastic. Also, one thing, I can't go a week without mentioning this game, Quilt Show.
Ah, yes.
From Rio Grande.
Oh, you've had a bit of feedback on it, haven't you?
Well, Matthew got in touch with me to tell me that apparently Quilt Show is... quite popular already in quilting circles.
Mm.
And this could be the game that everyone wants to buy for their mother-in-law. And that perhaps I'm wrong to be poo-pooing this idea and to say that Rio Grande is committing commercial suicide by putting out a game called Quilt Show, for God's sake. But you know what the thing, I've figured out what it is that is my problem with this. It's I don't want to be playing a game based on something that I could be doing in reality.
Yeah, well, it's the whole point of... why play a game about quilting when we could just sit around and make a quilt, for God's sake?
I want to invade a country, okay? I want to invade a country, but the closest I'm going to get is playing a board game about it, all right? Or I want to, set fire to my office and kill all my co-workers. Are we on?
Yes.
We're on, aren't we? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, thanks to Matt and Frank and everyone for saying
that. And look, we really appreciate the feedback. We appreciate the reviews on iTunes. It's fantastic to see that we've got 7 reviews on iTunes, 6 of which are 5-star, and 1 of which is from Trent's brother-in-law.
And we appreciate...
I'm going to go out and give you a review on iTunes now. It's probably going to be completely irrelevant, but you will probably only get 4 stars.
Oh, no.
I know, I can't let you have 5.
And we appreciate Alistair and everyone at Edge Radio for allowing us to prattle on for so long. And maybe we should shut up now because our talk breaks are exceeding
the maximum regulated
length.
Actually, look, I love how you guys blame the music on me nearly. I do get immense pleasure out of, painting you somehow.
Oh, hey, listen, anyone who's hanging out to find out about this dice game that we've been challenged to by the Edge of Reason guys, our sister show, it's the show that comes after us.
Yes.
That doesn't make them our sister, does it?
They're subultimate.
Brother-in-law.
Sister-in-law. It's not penultimate. It's post-ultimate, maybe?
We are still going to be sitting down and doing this. We're just waiting for Monty to get over the swine.
Yeah, get well soon, Monty.
Yeah.
We're thinking of you. Look, thank you so much to everyone who's been hitting us up on Facebook, on the iTunes, listening to our feeds, listening to Edge Radio Live. And look, I strongly recommend that you listen to the live feed on Edge Radio and hear the music because, we banter about the music. If you listen to the podcast, you don't get all the joy.
And you program such great music, Alistair.
I know, right? It's not much me anymore. It's the music director. But I prefer that he stays away from the limelight and you blame someone who should be blameless, I suppose.
Look, we appreciate everyone who listens in. We've had another full week. We've now got...
two talk breaks to carry over to next week because we didn't get to the Game of Thrones games. We didn't get to my Kickstarter update. So we'll bring them next week. But in the meantime, I have been Mark. He has been Trent. We've been the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thank you for joining us. We're going to leave you now with, just for a change, a Tassie track. We love the Tassie tracks. The Like a Giants with Turn This Fight. See you next week.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.